Of those, clearly, over the next few weeks and months, who have staked an awful lot, not only in terms of reputations, but also money. They're believing that certain things will happen in the future, and they're putting their money in huge volumes, in the belief that they will happen and that it will reap a dividend. So whether it be the hedge funds, the money markets, the short sellers, all working out what they think will happen come 31st of October. What we can be certain of, no matter what the outcome, is that on the 1st of November, there will be some people that will have made an awful lot of money, and there'll be other people that will have lost an awful lot of money. Who at this stage can quite say which side it will end up being on? And so James wrote 2,000 years ago something that applies so aptly today. He says, "Now listen, you who say with certainty, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money." James says, "You do not even know what will happen tomorrow. How can you boast about all your grand plans for the future when you can't even be certain what will happen tomorrow, never mind in a year's time?" Apostle James is writing to some powerful people. On this occasion, they're all men, powerful men. They've come to expect their voices to be heard. More than that, they've come to expect their voices to be followed. They are the power brokers. They're in business. They're in business to create new businesses. And they're going to do so with a primary concern of making money, profit. So the bottom line for them is all important. Yeah, but how much will it make me? What profits will I generate from my return on investment? And they're boastful about their corporate strategies, their business plans, their return on investments, their return on capital employed, all the kind of measures, the kind of metrics that we might use today in terms of business. And they're seeking to grow their businesses as empires. They want to spread it out as far and wide as they possibly can. And if that means going out on successive business trips to extend the reach of their businesses into new territories, to open up new franchises or new businesses in other countries, then they're going to do that as well. These are proper power brokers. But James says there's an arrogance about their approach. In verse 16, "You boast in your arrogant schemes." Wow, ouch. James seems to be challenging their sense of entitlement, their sense of privilege, their expectation that they have a right to make these businesses work, to make money, and that that is all that matters, that they are the gods of business. And we can walk down our high streets, and we can walk down the aisles in our supermarkets, and we can see evidence again of the gods of business. Small numbers of individuals and companies gobbling up so much of the commercial world. But James is not challenging the notion of business. He is not saying, don't go into business. He is not saying, business is bad. He's not even saying profit is bad. There's no point having an unprofitable business. That doesn't help anybody. Profit in itself can be a fine thing, a good thing, used in the right way. But what James is doing is he's calling all people, you and I and the big businesses, to follow Christ. That the big business communities to use their connections not only to extend their businesses, but to extend God's kingdom. His kingdom, not theirs. And so he's reminding the powerful, the business elite, that they are not masters of their own destiny. So don't boast, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money, blah, blah, blah. Why? Because you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. The New International Version translates verse 14, "Why? You do not even know what will happen tomorrow." Full stop. What is your life? So the New International Version puts it as two separate sentences. The Good News translation as we had read just a minute ago, takes the same two sentences and puts them together in one and says, you don't even know what your life tomorrow will be. One sentence. And it might seem semantics in one sense, but in ancient Greek, there wasn't the concept that we have of punctuation. There were no full stops, commas, semicolons. There were no grammar police in ancient Greece. No pedants. And so when it comes to translating the scriptures, the Bible translators have to put in the grammar where they believe the grammar should be. And you can change a sentence dramatically depending on where you put a full stop or a comma. So for example, let's try this. Let's eat, comma, Grandpa. But you take that comma out and it simply says, let's eat, Grandpa. That suddenly we've got a very different sentence understood here by the place of a comma or a full stop. And so where the NIV puts it as two separate sentences, why you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? The good news, by putting it two together, you don't even know what your life tomorrow will be. There's a strength that goes with this. You're trying to make out you have your fancy plans, that you know what will happen to you. But actually, who can control their life? Who can control the minute detail? We can know what we aspire to. We know what we want to do. And we might even put some plans in place to try and make those things happen. But we can't control all circumstances. And so there's an element of humility that we must have, because our life is not our own. There's the old adage, what's the best way to make God laugh? Tell him your plans. And sometimes we make elaborate, detailed plans. Why? Because we want to feel in control. We dot every I, we cross every T, and maybe we find this comforting, to know that every detail is pre-packed and worked out. It's like the sign above the church that says, nothing changes here. Solidifying things. Maybe that's a belief based on the assumption that God does not change. I mean, after all, the writer of the Hebrews, chapter 13, verse 8, says, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever. And Malachi, chapter 3, verse 6, I, the Lord, do not change. So there's something about this that implies that some things do not change, and yet, there was a belief that God is immutable. Immutable. In other words, it was a philosophical belief that God cannot change. He is unchangeable, intrinsically unable to change. And some people have based that belief on those two verses of Hebrews and Malachi. Jesus Christ saying, yesterday, today, and forever, I, the Lord, do not change. But actually, the immutability owes more to a kind of a Greek Hellenistic philosophy about ancient gods vying for dominance, because they believed that to suggest weakness was wrong. God cannot be weak, therefore God cannot change. And so they would do everything possible to describe God in ways that were unchanging. But when God the Son becomes fully human, born 2,000 years ago to an unmarried teenage mum, Mary, something changed. Something that wasn't before then had happened. Prior to then, was God the Son human? Even though historically he hadn't actually at this point been born. Still existing, for sure. But still existing in the same form as born 2,000 years ago. But then he was. So there was change. And then after 30 years, Jesus, God the Son, was put to death on the cross. There's another change. And then 3 days later, Jesus, God the Son, resurrected. Yet another change. The Bible even sometimes includes references to the fact that God changes his mind. He relents, he repents. And that might seem strange to think this. I mean, in Exodus, it talks about how God repents, changed his mind. But actually, doesn't that make prayer vital? Prayer becomes dynamic. Actually, I'm in communion with God. I'm in dialogue with God. I'm not twisting God's arm or forcing him to do what he does not want to do. But through prayer, circumstances can change. What God doesn't do is change who he is. That does not change. So God is love. He always is love. He shows his love in different ways. We respond to God's love in different ways. But he himself does not change in that way. But there is a sense in which we might have a fixed view of what we think God is like. And every time I try and package God in a neat box with a nice formula and a set of doctrines that I think contain God, I discover that actually God is bigger. He is more beautiful, more powerful, more gracious, more creative than ever I can comprehend. And the language I use fails. So to the powerful elite, James reminds them that they are like mist or puffs of smoke. I've got some mist here. Why? You do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Don't know where it's gone. I'll try it again. There, and it's gone. You're like mist. Temporary. Their decisions are temporary. They make big, bold decisions, big, bold strategies. Do they last? They're missed. And maybe knowing this helps us keep things in perspective. Maybe we stop boasting about our arrogant schemes, our own plans, because we know they're temporary. And maybe we gain hope through tough times, because actually, even the tough times are like missed. They're temporary. They don't last. And what James is talking about is don't base your life on things that are missed, things that are temporary, but instead base your life on what is permanent, what will last forever, what is eternal. And what God brings is eternal. What God does is everlasting. What I do is missed. So if I assume that life is rigid, and precast, predetermined, that nothing can be changed. Not so sure that helps. But likewise, if I try to make out that life is random, that there's no meaning, that there's no purpose or story behind it, that doesn't work either. That phrase, missed, it comes up again in Ecclesiastes, and we read that earlier on. Ecclesiastes, the assembler of knowledge or understanding, well, he declared, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. He might as well have put it like this. Bobbins, bobbins. Everything is just bobbins. The Good News Translation puts it even worse. Everything is useless. Useless. Life is all just useless. But what the NIV translates as meaningless and the Good News translates as useless, well, it's the Hebrew word hevel, and that means vapor or mist. It's like saying, mist, mist, says the teacher. Everything is mist. Here today, gone tomorrow. Temporary. Pursue instead what lasts. So, picture early in the morning. As the sun rises, there's a heavy mist in the atmosphere. It's hard to see anything. You look out your window and you can't quite see too far ahead. You can't even see the end of the garden or across the street. And if you walk out in it, very easy to get yourself lost. Do you turn left? Do you turn right? Do you go straight ahead? It's hard to see. And in that moment, in that mist, we can feel totally lost. Can't see our way. We lose perspective and direction. But the mist is temporary. It does not last. And as the sun rises, the warmth from the sun burns up the mist, and now you can see the way to go. The mist that had been there has now gone. It's disappeared. It was temporary. And when we boast about our plans, it's mere hevel. It's mist. And when we post on Instagram fancy pictures of our fabulous holiday, Savelle, do you know the travel industry is changing so much? Because now, increasingly, people want to go not on, they don't want many holidays, they want fewer but more dramatic holidays. They want to go far-flung places with exotic photo opportunities where they can post on Instagram scenes from fancy bays, countries and all sorts of locations that make them look good. And they'd rather have a long flight for 3 or 4 days only than have 2 or 3 weeks holidays at other points in the year because of the Instagram possibilities, that it, what it makes them look good. Missed. You post your fancy photographs on Instagram. You look great. You look beautiful. But it's missed. It's temporary. It's havel. It doesn't last. And so what he says instead is this: trust God for your present and your future. Now we all know this, don't we, that times are sometimes really tough. Maybe you're going through a really tough time. Certainly people that you know are going through really tough times. And it can be really hard to maintain perspective during those times. But even those tough times, as tough as they are, real as they are in that moment, in that total eternal scheme of God, even they are havel. They are missed, temporary. Like the pains of childbirth, which at the time seem horrendous, horrific, so I'm told, are havel. They're missed. There is something beyond which is eternal, which will last forever. So here, he says, verse 16, as it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes. All such boasting is evil. Whoa! Hits you right between the eyes. Bit strong there, James. Evil. Boasting about your plans. But if evil is the opposite of God, the antithesis of God, then to place our faith in our own plans and our own control is not to place our faith in God and his plans. And that's why it's evil, because it is devoid of God. It's an absence of God. He's not saying that suddenly people who have big plans become demonic and sprout little red horns and become little demons. He's saying that it's like a withdrawing of the divine. When we rely increasingly on our own structures, our own way of thinking, our own power, our own autonomy, we are removing ourselves from God. We are denying something of his godness within us, his spirit within us. It's a secularizing, if you like. It's an antithesis, an opposite of God. And that's why it's missed. Because it doesn't last. It's temporary. God is eternal. Forever. What he says lasts forever. That is not missed. That is clarity. When you go through difficult times, remember, as tough as it is, it's mere mist. It's havel. And when you're boasting or thinking about your own plans and how your future is going to work out, and you're wanting to maintain control of your own future, that too is havel. It's missed. Instead, look to the one who is eternal. Look to the one who brings life in all its fullness and abundance. The one we can spend eternity with. And that eternity, not way off in the future sometime after we have finished this life, but an eternity that starts now and goes on and on and on. That is something we can place our trust in and security in. Not in politics, not in business, not even in our own plans for the next week, but in the goodness of God and his ways for us.